Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. I'm laughing because of what we're going to be talking about. It's really cool. It's about life. It's about who are we? Why are we here? What are we doing? What's all this about? Where's it all going? What's up? And to help us answer those questions is the author of a book I've just read called 11 Days in May, The Conversation That Will Change Your Life. So we're going to have a conversation. We'll see what it changes. So I'm welcoming to the show the author of this book, J.D. Messenger. J.D., welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Peter.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed the dialogue in your book. It is a dialogue. It's a conversation between two people, and we're not even sure who they are, but we only can suppose, right?
Yes. Of course, we're laughing because it's one of those things which you sort of don't want to reveal and let the readers figure it out for themselves.
Okay. Well, there's a lot the readers can figure out for themselves in the book because, after all, what is our truth? Right?
Well, I mean, that's really what the whole book is all about.
Yet that's your smallest chapter. So what's that about?
Well, when I actually had written the parable for the guests that are listening, the book is 36 short parables that answer questions like, what is love? What is war? What is sex? What is thoughts? What are intentions? What is a coincidence? Goosebump, pain, suffering, time, matter, things, small, little questions.
Stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's a conversation between me and my unnamed friend, and there's clues and hints kind of along the way. One of the parables is what is truth? And there was a parable that was written for truth. And when I got to the end of the book, and the editors and I had started editing it, and the book's called 11 Days of May because it was written in 11 days. I don't know if you knew that or not. And I really, really was not aware of what I wrote.
Right. You actually write about it at the end of the book that
how it
operated, and you weren't even sure that the you in this was you to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, when I was done, my wife said, "What have you been doing in your room for the last 2 weeks till 4 or 5 in the morning?" And sometimes I pass the kids going getting up for school in the morning, and I said, "I think I wrote a book." And she said, "Well, what's it about?" And I said, "I don't know. I haven't read it yet." So the thing on truth was, and in the epilogue, I describe a bunch of a series of events or, what you might call strange phenomenon, conversations with God, spirits, angels, signs and wonders, homeless person shouting at me in the street and the answer to a prayer. So the parable on truth, I got messages and signs about that. Basically, who am I to write a parable talking about what is truth? And I like that parable. It's on my website now, my blog at jdmessenger.com. But so I took it out and I left it blank when you got to the what is truth. And it was blank, which I thought was hysterical. But then the editors and the printers and everybody kept screwing it up. They kept taking the blank pages out. They couldn't get it right.
Right.
So we put a few words in there.
They were living in the world of form.
Yes, absolutely.
And you talk about that so much in the book, and I really feel that this is an opportunity. Your book is an opportunity to understand what is true and what is not true in terms of how we hold form and how we use form and what we need form for. And that allows us, I think this book is a great allowance for us to be who we are. And yet, not to aspire to be higher or bigger than we are, because that might skip some pages in our own books.
Well, I think First of all, the short story was that I was a nuclear engineer and submarine officer and corporate CEO, and I had a very fascinating life, did a lot of great things, and at one point 12 years ago, I broke my neck, I died, I left my body, and a lot of strange things happened when I came back. And over my 12-year journey, what I came to conclusion after a lot of pain and a lot of suffering and a lot of being on the edge of going down that dark night of the soul and coming back and deciding that everything is energy and energy is photons and photons are light. And when you look at things that we consider matter or solid, a solid is really a description that we use to talk about energy held together in what, form. These things, the walls, the floor, our bodies. I mean, if you look at my fingertip and you go in 100 million times with a microscope, you're going to see nothing. You're going to begin to see clouds, but it's nothing. I mean, you can't really see energy. And energy is, this energy from the sun, which forms all of the things around us and the plants and the birds and the animals and everything that grows. I mean, you can't see that energy. We don't actually see sunlight. We see a reflection of sunlight. And this energy is not something you can see or touch, but it comes together, and it's held together through binding forces, which is not anything you can see, and that creates form. And we're living in an illusion. I mean, what we're living in is reality, but it is sort of an illusion because death is not the end. I can guarantee you that from my perspective and from my discussions and emails, it appears that 50% of the population either has had an NDE or knows someone that's had an NDE.
A near-death experience. And you had actually more than one.
Yeah, I actually did. I've actually had four. I think it was a reject on the other side. The first one, it's not in that book, but I was a fireman when I was 18, and the short story is I was on the second story, and the whole building collapsed except for the 2 feet around me. So that was not a near-death experience where I got hurt or died, but it was pretty close to dying.
And yes, you looked at your inner nature after that.
yeah.
This is a fascinating journey you're on because you've had so many experiences. Plus, you were a radio host.
I was. What happened, Peter? After I came back, I had visions and insights of things that would happen in the future. And that really terrified me. I mean, the first one was something simple. I saw a funeral, like watching a movie. It's kind of like watching that BBC show, Sherlock Holmes or something, how they show little screens and things on the television screen, if you've ever seen that. But I saw a funeral happen. And skipping the details, 3 days later, I was walking through town and there I saw the exact same funeral and I was like shocked, but then I would write things, and then I discovered that the things I were writing were in the paper, the exact headlines and 80% of the words. I knew about the future energy crisis, the future financial crisis in 2008. This is 5, 6, 7 years before.
Right, and, so what's going to happen in 5, 6, 7 years from now?
Well, I think our country's in great trouble.
Uh-huh.
I don't actually really talk about that, but I do have very strong beliefs that between 2015 and 2020, our nation is going to go through some great challenges. And it's no surprise. I mean, we are technically insolvent. The 42% of college students can't get a job that pays them enough, and their college degrees are 440% more expensive than it was for me. So there's a combination of social factors and forces that are creating the perfect storm. And they're going to have to be dealt with one way or the other.
Right. And so this brings me back to your book and the talk, your discussion about what's our purpose in life? What are we here for? Why are we here for all this destruction and perhaps all the suffering that goes along with it?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it's very simple to me. I mean, I have experienced many lives, and everything I say, I say from the point of view of having personal experiences and then triangulating them, you know, researching, getting facts. So after I started to experience many lives, for example, I became fluent in Mandarin in 60 hours. That's a little weird.
That is.
And I'm still pretty fluent in Mandarin, and my Mandarin was so good that people in China and Singapore and Malaysia who are Chinese would ask me to speak English because it was embarrassing them how good my Mandarin was. but it went beyond that. I mean, physical events in this life expose things from other lives, and we don't have enough time for some of the stories. Some of them are in the book. And they're fascinating, but these are real events that happened, and the only explanation for all of these phenomena, and this is a preface to your question, the only explanation for all of the events that happened, and there were hundreds of them, is that death was not the end, and matter's not really solid, and we live in this world of light, which takes on form, and we're a soul in a body, and that soul, is here to learn lessons. And
right,
those lessons are things like love and peace and tolerance and patience and forgiveness. And the irony is that one of the parables is what is devious. And what it says is God doesn't have pixie dust. If you pray for courage, be prepared to face your greatest fears. In other words, it's sort of the devious nature by which you have to teach humans is that we don't change because we love to have change. You know, all energy seeks its lowest state of entropy. All energy seeks its lowest state of energy exertion. And so, if there is no catalyst to a process, whether it's a manufacturing process or a human process, it doesn't change. And so the things that we perceive as suffering or evil and pain and wars and a lot of these things, we're manifesting it all ourselves. And we've got the most powerful sonar dome, which is the supercomputer on our shoulders, that does it all. And we can talk about how that works and what that's doing. But so the lesson is to learn these values and virtues, and of course it's to have fun and learn love and, you know, have beautiful relationships and create and invent wonderful things.
Right. And we're facing so much adversity now, and yet at the same time our clarity is awakening, our higher faculties are opening up more.
Oh my gosh. I mean, the millennial generation is the most conscious, awake generation in the history of humanity.
Sure.
I mean, look at what Snowden just did. He's fighting for truth, justice, and transparency, you know, sacrificing a career and a life and a girlfriend and a home to share information which, you know, likely will put him in jail. And he's doing that because it's the right thing to do, and God bless him for it.
Right.
And they're all doing that. The millennials don't care, you know, that the color of our skin or national origin, sexual orientation, as do I. We are all 99.99% the same DNA and 98% the same air, water, and minerals. You and me and every walking being on this planet is less than 1 in 1 billion parts different. And the only thing that makes us think we're different are those thoughts.
Or the form, the outward form, and the way that our minds try to dominate and control.
Right.
Because of that.
Yeah, that's the faulty, I call them flops, the faulty, limiting, and outdating programs. And our mind is this... It's the most powerful supercomputer in the world. It's a million times or more powerful than a Cray supercomputer, and it's got software programs, and they sit in our subconscious mind, and a lot of them are good, like don't stick your finger in that flicking yellow stuff, it burns, But a lot of them are faulty, limiting, and outdated. And there's some great ones that are mentioned in the book.
Well, you create clarity. It was really wonderful to read about your comparison of science and religion, and to help understand how religious science is.
it's really, you know, there was quite a lot of experiences that happened, physical and non-physical, when this book was being edited, which was edited very quickly. The book needed essentially no editing. The book would actually not allow me to edit it. And when I tried to change things, the computer would lock up, the power would fail. I mean, you know, giant bird flew in my face. That's in the epilogue, big goose. But the funny thing is that when we got to the religion part, and it says that there is no common definition or acceptance of what the word religion means, like several people and readers are like, what? You know, how can you say that? You know, but if you do your homework and you go talk to religious professors or universities or they'll tell you, I mean, there is a huge debate between people on just, we don't even agree on what the word religion means.
Right. And yeah, it's all up for grabs. And in many ways, so is science, except for the outer superficial nature of it.
I mean, as you might have been referring to the fact that it basically says there's a religion called science and a science called religion, and they're two sides of the same coin. And the religion called science is based on theories and practices and models and postulates. But the fundamental laws of this science are based on faith. They've never been proven. Okay? We can explain to you what the force of gravity does, but we can't explain to you what gravity is. We can talk to you about what fire is, but here's your clue. When you look up the word fire in the dictionary, it says something that's burning. You look up burning, it says something that's on fire. You know, we don't know exactly what fire is. We had 2,500 scientists in the world trying to understand what the sun does, because the sun's not really burning, you know. There's no oxygen in space. There's no wood out there, you know. So these things that sometimes, you know, force, we can't tell you what force is. It's Newton's second law. It's not proven. It's a theory. We know that F equals MA, but we don't know what the force is. So my point is that there's a religion called science. Science is based on faith. However, there's a science called religion, that religion is actually the explanation of energy in motion that we use to heal, that when we say prayers, we're talking about intentions and motivations, and intentions and motivations are the devices that set the filter on our supercomputer called our brain, which opens us up to receive information. There's a science behind the statement or the quote, ask and you will receive.
Right, and these are postulates that are like science.
Yes.
And they allow life to work in many ways.
And they have been proven over and over and over and over again. You know, I mean, healing hands, this is one of my biggest ones. I was a little fired up this morning taking my food supplements. I'm a natural kind of, you know, I like to... I had a bad nerve in my jaw, and the doctor wanted to do root canal, and I said, no, you're not drilling into my jaw. I'm going to just take what the, you know, Chinese medicine, herbal teas and things like that. And, of course, it took 3 months for the nerve to get better, but it got better. So I'm reading my supplements this morning, and I was like saying to my son, walk around the kitchen, I said, how come none of this stuff is approved by the FDA? You know, all these things that I've used to heal my body, because if you read the book, you know that I broke my neck, and my neck was fused solid bone.
Right, and it opened up.
And I regenerated the vertebrae in my neck, and I've got the x-rays to show it. I've been showing them all over the country. Doctors, surgeons, and everyone come up and look at the x-ray before and after, and they're like speechless. And I said, you know, your neck isn't solid. Those bones weren't solid. and it's all energy. And I interviewed Nobel laureates in physics. I interviewed the theological advisor to the Pope and Holy See for 17 years. I interviewed Francis Collins, who led the Human Genome Program. And basically what these healers were doing when they were working on me is I was seeing images of stem cells. This isn't in the book. And I didn't know what they were at the time, but they were reprogramming the stem cells, which restructured and regenerated my neck. Now, that's because I was in Singapore, and they said, we're not putting anything in your body that wasn't there when you were born. Amen, hallelujah. No screws and plates, no cadaver bone. And if you got to take a pill, they're really judicious about it. They will not give you an antibiotic for more than 3 days because they said there's no antibiotic you need for more than 3 days. And I'd had nothing but this Reiki and acupuncture and cupping and herbal teas and Chinese medicine and all that. And son of a gun, you know, this religion or science called religion actually works.
Yes, and that's intention.
Yes. Yeah. It's intention.
Right. And that's powerful. And
yeah.
So your book has so much inspiration in it because it allows us to get to the bottom line of how it all works.
Do I have time to explain the thing about our brain and attention and motivation?
Sure.
Okay. This is a way, you see, I had to think of everything, you know, from the left brain nuclear engineer point of view that I was experiencing, which was driving me crazy. So when I saw healers work or I knew my neck was healed, I mean, I had to prove to myself that this was real in a very structured scientific way. And what I discovered is that our brain is like the sonar dome on my submarine. When I was chasing Russians underwater in 1985 in the Cold War, we would hear snapping shrimp, singing whales, and ocean sounds. And that noise would be so loud that it would block the noise from the Russian submarines. So we put a filter on the sound waves, you know, coming in. We use the system, the computer, and it blocks that noise, which we know is background noise. And all we hear is the target. Well, this is the way our brain is working. Right now, there are billions and billions of emails flying around and billions of documents and photos and every television show and every radio show. You can't doubt that that is flying around every single person. If we picked up that information, we would drop dead in a nanosecond because our hard drive would fry. Well, we don't actually have a hard drive. That was a metaphor. but in order to survive, we have a defense mechanism that filters, and that is filtering the information we receive. And so when we are asking for guidance or help or seeking, you know, our intentions are to get the job, find the yellow BMW, you know, find the cute girl, what it is, whatever it is, when we set our intentions, we are opening up our sensors to receive the information that we sought. So when we ask, we receive. Now, the fascinating part is that a lot of people don't understand the difference between intentions and motivations. And that's really, really important. An intention could be, and these are two parables, or one of the parables in the book. One of the intentions that's discussed as an example is a student learning math. And the mother wants the child to learn math, and the teacher wants the child to learn math. So they have the same intention. But the mother wants the child to learn math because she loves them. She's motivated from her heart. Whereas most of the teachers, unfortunately today, they're motivated by fear. They've got to pass the exam because if they don't pass the exam, the school doesn't get the funding because it's no child left behind. So same intention, two different motivations, fear and love. And the energy behind love, the actual field of energy behind love is 5,000 times bigger, and the force of the energy behind love is magnitude 50 times stronger. So when we say that, when we set an intention which is motivated from our heart, we are opening up the filters, and the force and the field is much more powerful. Love is a more powerful force. Isn't that cool?
Yes, and also parents operate out of a lot of fear for their children. So it is hard. but it can get a little fuzzy when we want to make sure they pass their tests so that they can go on to get whatever, you know, diplomas and degrees and et cetera, and succeed in life. And of course, it's motivated by love. And so that's very powerful. But and that says a lot about life. But it also, this might discern why we might not get that yellow Mercedes or red Mercedes, whatever color you like, even though we have an intention for it. But it doesn't mean we won't be satisfied in the end. It's just that form doesn't always fit our perfect view.
Well, this is where there's a bunch of illusions. My next book is all about illusions. And the actual, you know, you hear people say this, we actually push away subconsciously things that we don't, that we think we want, but we're repelling them. Or we're doing things that we think we like when we actually don't. So the understanding the motivation is really important.
Right.
Because going back to the parent, you know, if they are trying to teach the child to learn something out of fear, they can actually subconsciously help them fail because they're filling that child with fear.
Right.
So it can backfire.
Right. And so children have to find their own truth.
And they don't have to, you know, this is not conscious. You feel it. You know, you have 100 trillion cells in your body, they say. And we just prove that each cell holds over a billion bits of information. So our body is a receiver and storing of all of this information, which is non-physical, you know, energy. And, you know, we don't actually have a hard drive in our head. There's no storage device other than if you want to think of these cells as the storage device. And so this is why, you know, when someone's staring at us, we can feel it. Or, you know, well, I mean, we get goosebumps, or, which I call truth bumps. You know, everything has, there's no accidents. Everything happens
right.
for a reason.
Right. And we have to trust that there's a program going on.
Yeah.
And the more we can know that program, the better.
Right.
And we only have a few minutes left, and I'm so happy to be talking with you, because not only is this book wonderful, 11 Days in May, but I'm really looking forward to your next book.
Oh, thanks.
And how can people find you?
Well, my website is jdmessenger.com. And the book, of course, is available on, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and iTunes Store and ebook and all the normal online retailers.
Well, that's great. And, it's wonderful to be on this path. As you see, I'm on this path as well, and I'm also a practicing intuitive. And so I am in consciousness in a way that a lot of people don't understand, trying to help people to understand themselves better and to open up to, there's nothing about me that's any different from anyone else, and you too.
Right.
It's just that we want to help people find those extra powers in themselves so they can see what we're talking about better.
Yeah, well said. You know, I have 4 world-first innovations to my name, and I don't claim to be the author of this book or the source of any of those creations.
Right.
I just tapped into it.
It just came in. I know. It's a great story. So, J.D. Messenger, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's great talking with you.
Well, thank you so much. I really am grateful for it.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I can be reached at Peter at Heart River, HEART River.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.